Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Trina. Thanks for listening on this week's show. We've got two guests. We've got Jim Ross, legendary wrestling play-by-play man, currently with AEW. Talks about the current state of wrestling. Has some interesting insight on whether Vince McMahon is getting ready to sell the WWE. And shares some insight into the Hell in the Cell where Mick Foley got thrown off the cage by The Undertaker. I asked him if there's anything we don't know about that whole thing that went down, and he answered that. So that was good. And then we have John Oram from Sports Business Journal. Talk about some media topics, NBA playoff ratings, the golf streaming situation that seemed like a mess with the U.S. Open, and whether we get John's opinion on whether Vince is going to sell WWE, and we get into whether Charles Barkley will retire in 2 years, like he said. So, and then after that, we get into our new Train of Thought segment with my buddy Sal Licata. So we've got Jim Ross, John Oran, and then Train of Thoughts to close it out on this week's episode. Before we get to it, just a reminder, if you missed last week, we had John Wertheim on the pod to talk about his book about all things 1984 in terms of sports and pop culture. So if you grew up in the 80s, I guarantee you will enjoy it. 2 weeks ago, Stu Gatz from the Dan Le Batard Show. 3 weeks ago, Doris Burke and Evan Longoria. So check those out. Subscribe to the SI Media Podcast. And if you want to rate and review, that helps as well. All right, here we go with this week's show. First up, Jim Ross. All right, joining me now, greatest wrestling play-by-play man ever. Currently working with the AEW, also a senior advisor for the company, has a bunch of jobs we'll get into, podcasts and the JR studio sessions, barbecue stuff. So we got everything with good old JR Jim Ross. Jim, how's it going?
I'm good, man. Good to talk to you again.
Always a pleasure. Like I said, you got the podcast with Conrad, who is the wrestling podcast guru.
Yep.
And you've got this other venture, JR Studio Sessions on adfreeshows.com. We'll get into all of that. Let's talk a little wrestling.
Okay.
Well, let's start with this. Give me sort of the state of AEW right now. Obviously, they come along. Great story from a business side of competing with WWE. Get a deal with Turner and end up, you know, making WWE move NXT off Wednesday nights. What's sort of the state of AEW right now? You think it's progressing where it should be? Things are going well. Give us a little sort of state of the union on AEW.
We're like any young company, Jimmy. We're still growing and getting, hopefully getting better at what we all do in our respective jobs. You know, we're getting ready to start back on the road, which is, I think, really crucial. Looking forward to that. I think we start back on July the 7th, or I think that's the date, on Wednesday night, back at our regular time on TNT in Miami. So we got some good dates coming up. The advances are good. Ticket sales are good. So that tells me that we're doing something right. But I think the main thing, as far as the fans would be concerned about, is that a lot of our young talents are maturing and getting used to working a television match, or getting used to working on national TV. And so many of our young guys came from the indies where they didn't have that opportunity. So I'd say we're progressing well. We're a young team that's growing. And again, our veterans that are contributing, the Chris Jerichos and the Moxleys, and, you know, Paul White's here, and Mark Henry's here now. And those guys they're not here necessarily just for in-ring work. They're here to teach and coach and mentor. So I think that, as far as I'm concerned, of all the companies I've worked for, and I've worked for many since 1974, this is probably the most wholesome, positive atmosphere that I've been able to participate with. So I think that we're doing well. You know, Tony Khan's a enthusiastic, a brilliant young leader, always been a great fan. And I'm not just talking that for lip service. I mean, he's a historian. He remembers things I said before he was born. I don't know. You know, it's like, are you kidding me, man? You weren't even old enough. No, but I got tapes. I tell you, I was a tape trader, and you know, he read the newsletters and all these things. So, Tony's fun to work for, say the least. It's a different deal in working with a guy that's in his mid 30s or someone that's in their mid 70s. And I follow, you know, I'm 69, so I'm the oldest guy there, I think. But nonetheless, I like where we are, and going back on the road will be just exactly what our young guys need.
Yeah, and I'm sure the fans are looking forward to that as well. If you had to pick one thing, what do you think is the biggest challenge for AEW?
Talent development, developing new stars, getting that homegrown feel on certain talents. You know, Jungle Boy Jack Perry is going to challenge Saturday night on TNT. Kenny Omega with the AEW title. That's a big deal for this young kid, Jungle Jack. But Perry, Darby Allin, among others, there are others. But I think evolving these young talents and continue to grow them, give them opportunities for quality playing time minutes is something I think is very important. So I think just continuing to evolve and develop young talents with a skill set to be able to work a television match, because that's a different ball game than working a live event with no cameras there.
Right.
It's a different sensibility. It's a different perception. So I think that would probably be the key thing, continued talent development. And, you know, we have a lot of young, you know, we do two other shows. We're getting ready to start a third show. So our roster has got to be managed really judiciously. So I think talent development, Jimmy, is a key thing for us. Continue to evolve those kids and those young guys.
Did you get any pleasure from WWE moving NXT off Wednesday night and not competing with AEW Dynamite?
Gosh, I'll be dishonest, and I'm not usually dishonest if I said no. Oh, no, it didn't bother me. It was a minor win, I think, maybe. You know, we're the upstart. You know, they're the NFL. We're not, but we play pretty good football, so to speak. But you know, it was kind of fun that they moved off their spot. We made them blink, and at least if nothing else. And I think it'll be better for fans and both brands by being separated. I was never a big fan of the Wednesday night wars. I thought it was uncreative. It's kind of lax reporting. It's the equivalent of the Monday Night Wars, but far from it, quite frankly.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, it's just numbers. Just do the math.
Well, also, but just the way people consume the product is completely changed. I mean,
yep.
When you had the Monday Night Wars, you had to watch Raw and Nitro live Monday night. And if you didn't, you were shit out of luck. I mean, now everything goes on YouTube. Or, you know, there's clips on Twitter. There's so many ways to consume it all.
Yeah, exactly. Streaming has changed the game. Streaming services is a new thing. I just believe that if you're a wrestling fan, you should be supporting all your genre, because, you know, God knows if it wasn't for people like you and a handful of others, you know, we're still going to be looked at as that dinosaur. That's that pro wrestling thing. I used to watch it when I was a kid. You know, if I've heard that once, I've heard it a thousand times, seemingly, especially on airplanes. Well, I don't watch it anymore, but I remember you on there. You had that black hat, right? You're that guy. Yeah, that's me. I think that it's the growth of the business, that them moving to Tuesday made everybody happy. They get an independent audience. They can build a bigger audience. The wrestling fans don't have to make a choice. And I think that's all good for the business in general.
If you don't mind, I'm going to ask you to play sort of psychologist, psychiatrist here for a minute, because obviously you know Vince extremely well. And Vince, just, I'm looking at it as a fan, sort of, doesn't sort of concede often. So when he did move NXT, because people could say whoever makes Vince makes every decision there. I think that's still clear. What did you make of it from, like, the, you know, Vince, do you think, was it Vince wasn't happy and he did it? Or do you think Vince is just thinking strictly business? This is better for us. We have to do it.
I think the latter, for the growth of the NXT brand, for their ongoing relationship with the NBC Universal. I think, logically speaking and taking personalities and emotions out of it, it was the best thing for them to do. It was the best thing for them to do with their relationship. They could build a bigger audience. And again, the fans don't have to make a choice. I can tell you, I'm sure it pissed him off to read every week where we didn't beat them every week. I don't want to exaggerate.
Most weeks.
But a lot of weeks, more weeks than not, we were the number one watched pro wrestling show on Wednesday nights. And I know he didn't take that as in a good way. He's very competitive. And he's used to being the bull of the woods.
Yeah.
He's used to doing whatever he wants to do and winning. And on Wednesday nights against us, they weren't winning on a regular basis. I'm sure that bothered him to some degree. But I think that at the end of the day, it was the right decision to make for everybody involved.
I don't want to ask you a ton of questions on WWE and the current product since you're not there, but I do have to ask one question and then we could go on with it. You know, a lot's been made because they've had a lot of talent cuts, a lot of cuts in the office, the Nick Khan hire and sort of restructuring. And there's a lot of rumblings that they're getting ready to sell. No one would know the answer to this question better than you. I mean, would Vince ever sell?
Yeah, I think he would. I think he would.
Do you think they're getting ready to sell now?
I don't know. It certainly seems to be leaning that way. But I got nothing concrete to base that on other than what business people that have been involved in sales and acquisitions and things of this nature, you know, they're cutting their overhead, which is obvious. A lot of that is in payroll. Their payroll has ballooned to hugely. Some of those guys that got cut, the last round of cuts were, some of them were, you know, $1 million plus players. So you get you get those guys and do the math again, and it kind of makes a little bit of sense that they could be traveling that road. The McMahon family, their grandsons, the grandsons' grandsons, they're not going to have to worry about money ever. And it may be where, you'd think that Paul Levesque and his wife Stephanie will be, you know, I've always thought that Levesque would run the company when Vince decided to step away. The issue is that, and I believe this, that Vince is never going to step away. It'll be a tragic day when he's no longer the head honcho of WWE because he'll be passed away. He's there for life. And he's great grandpa and his dad, and, you know, it's just in their blood. It's what they do. It's like their name was Barnum or Bailey. This is what we do.
Right.
So, but I do think that the company is not unviable.
Right.
But I don't know for sure how that's all going to work out ever. I don't know. But I do think that, it looks as if there could be some rumblings in that regard. And then again, it may not be. They just may be becoming more efficient. They may be having a better, different leadership and different counsel with their executive team to say, we need to become a more efficient brand. I don't know.
I'm going to ask one follow-up on that because I know I said we'll just leave it at that, but I got to ask a follow-up on it because I think most people who pay attention feel the way you do, that Vince is never retiring. Vince is doing that to his last day. So what I find interesting is if they did sell, why would, maybe you can share some insight, I don't know if you know, but why would Triple H, Paul Levesque, and Stephanie want the company sold? Wouldn't they? I would have assumed they would have wanted it. I don't know how that works in terms of family and stuff, but it would still be surprising to me if it got sold only because I would have thought those two would have taken it and run with it.
Well, I think you make a very valid point, Jimmy, but the thing about it is that whomever buys, let's say it sells, it's got to be sold with the thought in mind that I have people in place to run it. It is a very unique genre. It'd be like saying, I'm going to buy an NFL team, but I don't watch the game. I don't understand football. How many guys on the side? Oh, 11? Okay, I didn't know that type deal. I know that's absurd, but right. Bottom line is pro wrestling is such a unique animal that it takes a special breed, a special background, special desires to make it work because it's nothing like you can manage something else and it's all the same. Our audience now with social media as it is and things of that nature are certainly more educated. They have more information. There's more information flow and wrestling fans have been, you know, they finally have something they can carry their flag around. You know, people are paying attention in a great way. And I get, like I said earlier, social media is the key to that deal. So if I was going to sell WWE and I, let's say Amazon, throwing that out. That don't mean nothing.
Right.
It's a name. It could be Acme Brick Company and Wile E. Coyote's getting hit with it. I don't know. The bottom line is who better to run it than Triple H and his wife?
Right.
DNA's there. Experience is there. You know, Vince has given them a great opportunity to get more experience in management, upper management. The key thing in this whole deal, if you look at their situation, it's no different than ours in AEW. The two components that we have to protect are talent and television. One without the other doesn't make any money. So I would think that by any stretch, that if it did sell, it'd be a huge windfall for all involved, especially the family. And it's certainly no guarantee that, or nobody can say that, well, I guess Triple H and Stephanie got to find new jobs. I see them standing right there and running it.
Right.
That would be a guess.
Yeah,
all
this
is speculative.
Yeah, of course. It's very interesting. Fascinating to see how that plays out. All right, switching gears, or as your partner Conrad would say, let's keep it moving.
Yeah, a lot to unpack here.
Yeah.
Conrad loves the lot to unpack here. Let's keep it moving, JR.
Well, give me sort of the list here of the JR jobs right now. So you've got AEW play-by-play on Wednesday nights.
Right.
Then you've got the Grilling JR podcast, which I'm a big fan of, and I do my best to listen every week. I may not listen every week, but I do listen to every show. I do catch up. And I mean, Conrad does a phenomenal job with those, and it's great to get your insight on those. You guys have had some phenomenal episodes. And tell us what's going on here with the JR's studio sessions.
Well, when I was working for CW there and working for Turner, I was doing Falcon football for WSB radio. And they opened the Georgia Dome that year. They cleaned house except for Jeff Van Note, the old center for the Falcons, number 57. And they kept Jeff as the color guy. They hired a great play-by-play guy named Bill Rosinski, who's now doing a lot. He does a lot of things, college football, a hell of a lot of golf. And so I got to know the management team at WSB. And so I was also doing wrestling at the same time. So I was shooting a breeze with the upper management. I said, you know, what do you do on, I'd like to do a call-in show, a talk show. I think it would work out real well because wrestling fans have never had that outlet. And so so we came up with the idea, a little show called Wrestling with Jim Ross. Very creative, I might add. I didn't name it, but that's what it was. And so it aired Sunday night at 9 o'clock, the proverbial wasteland for radio
talk.
Shows.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if that was your only source of income, Jimmy, and you got 9 o'clock on Sunday night for an hour, you probably wouldn't be running out and getting a realtor to buy a big house. So they gave me so many minutes of commercial time to use as I saw fit, which means sell. And they took so many minutes. They provided the board off. I did the show from their studio, WSB, meaning they, and started that radio show. I did it for a couple of years until I got hired by WWE in 93, but subsequently I debuted at WrestleMania 9. So these shows were captured by a friend of mine named Dennis Brent, who has been worked with me and for me for a long time, and as did his wife. And so he had all those cassettes. So I connected Conrad and Dennis together. All the tapes are in great shape. They did whatever technical people do to clean them up or whatever. So on Fridays, I think it is on Fridays, we do on the Ad-Free Network, we play one of those episodes.
So that's
kinds of guests on it, you know, different guests, a lot of fan calls. It was a fun little deal. I made a couple of bucks on it. And, you know, there's a lot of days where I would do a Falcon game at 1 o'clock Eastern on Sunday and then get to studio for our 9 o'clock radio show.
Right. And it was one person who had all the old cassette tapes that you were able to restore. That's
one of my best friends taped every episode.
Amazing.
And, so we put our heads together and now the tapes are in Conrad's possession. And I, as you said, I'm told we're doing well with that show. It's people are interested, and it's an hour long.
Yeah.
It might not even be an hour long. You exclude the commercials.
Right.
But in any event, that's what we're doing on that deal. My podcast drops on Thursday. That's Grilling with JR. So,
right.
And I have a blast doing that with Conrad.
I was going to ask you, I mean, you had a very, very successful podcast before you did the one with Conrad. And then you teamed up with Conrad, who does, right. I think, five now or six, you know, does them with Bruce Pritchard and Jeff Jarrett and Eric Bischoff. How do you like, you like doing it more with Conrad? Did you like your old one? What do you like about doing this one here with Conrad?
Well, my other show, I had guests.
Right.
And you know how it is to get guests.
Yep.
You get a guy like me that calls you the morning you're going to record. So can we go a little earlier? and you're nice enough to acquiesce to that. I by far, working with Conrad's better than working alone. It's great to have somebody to play off of. We don't have the issue of guests. We don't do guests.
Right.
We do events.
Right.
We take events that that are significant in the wrestling landscape and also where I was involved, either as a play-by-play guy or the head of talent relations, whatever it may be, but it's a direct relationship to it. So I was an eyewitness to what went on. And then Conrad's got a team of researchers, and I get a great script of all the historical data for this particular event. It sparks my memory. It's just a good deal in that regard. So Conrad by far is better than JR going solo, at least in JR's point of view.
He knows how to structure it too. And, you know, he's good at knowing what the stories are that the fans want to hear you right. tell. And
he's a big fan.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I alluded earlier about the WWE as we were discussing it and, you know, where the product knowledge is essential in our world because it is so unique. It's not simply a good guy versus a bad guy. And here's the title. There's got to be a story leading into the title match or whatever it may be. And Conrad's been a fan forever. You know, he's celebrating his 40th birthday soon, in like the next week or so. And he's been a lifelong fan. He does 7 podcasts a week.
7.
It's ridiculous.
It's crazy. Yeah. And I don't know how he does it. I don't
we
know.
We recorded, how he does it. As a matter of fact, as you and I are talking now, we recorded this morning. I was up at 7 o'clock getting ready to do a podcast with Conrad.
What was the topic?
Which made it 6 o'clock his time in Alabama, and I'm in Jacksonville.
What was the topic? Give us a tease.
The one this morning was part 2 of the Lex Luger story and how the Lex Express evolved and why he didn't really quote unquote get over.
Right, right. Yeah, I listened to the first part of that and
it was, and we did one Monday, which is one of my favorite shows that drops this week on Terry Funk, who arguably is one of the top 2 or 3 all-time performers ever in pro wrestling. Kept reinventing himself. He got into movies. He led the way for a lot of guys to do things like that. He was a hardcore guy. He was NWA champion. You know, he's second generation talent and one of my favorite people on earth. He's the kind of guy that I would be happy to volunteer with the lipstick cameras in a vehicle and drive from border to border and record every damn thing we had.
Yeah.
It would be him ordering breakfast is entertaining. So that's what we have coming up the next couple of weeks. But Conrad's are great to work with, and I'm single. I'm a widower, so I'm here alone. So I'm very flexible in my schedule. Mm-hmm. So that works out well for him. He said yesterday he started recording podcasts at 7 a.m. Central, and he got through at 6 p.m. Central, straight through.
Wow.
And what I found to be magnificent about that is that he only had to pee once.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, good. Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, I recently wrote a couple of weeks ago for my column on SI.com that this was if you're an old school wrestling fan, which I am, this is really a hell of a time here with these documentaries, if for lack of a better word, with the Dark Side of the Ring on Vice, which you were a part of, and then obviously the WWE did their A&E biographies. I've watched them all. I've enjoyed them all. I know there's been a little bit of backlash here and there about maybe one was too harsh on someone or what's your overall feeling on them and how they've been?
I think it's been good for the business overall because it tells it's a history lesson. And it may be to some degree revisionist history for some people. I'm with you. There's been some of those I've really enjoyed. The Steve Austin documentary on A&E I thought was stellar. And not just because I was in it and I made the edit, but because it told Steve control that show. He was not going to let anything slip by that wasn't after it. And I'm sure there are many, many more that didn't have anything to do with the edit that, maybe it showed in the product, but I thought it was real good. Some people were upset, they were a little harsh on the Ultimate Warrior. Well, you know, the bottom line was Ultimate Warrior was not a great guy.
Right.
God bless him and his family and all that stuff. I really, you hate to say things about people that are deceased, but he wasn't a great guy.
Right. And he got very lucky. I think he got very lucky that he ended up getting that Hall of Fame deal, because if that happened now, where he was giving those political speeches, and they weren't even political speeches. I mean, just anti-gay, homophobic, these rants. That happens now. Vince is never bringing him back to go into the Hall of Fame.
No. I was shocked on how Warrior entered and left WWE multiple times that Vince even considered it. Much less name an award after the Warrior Award, which I don't really know what it is, but nonetheless, I know they have one. But I think Vince getting him in the Hall of Fame and making that happen was, I thought, kind of miraculous, because they didn't have a great relationship. Now, on the night of the show, everybody's going to hug each other and big, alpha male slaps and all that stuff. But I never thought Vince thought a lot about the Warrior, but it was the right, much like we talked about moving from Wednesday to Tuesday, it was the right thing for business.
Right.
Because Warrior did have a lot of fans.
Yeah.
He sold a lot of merchandise, and a certain demographic, that are now adults and have buying power and so forth, were Warrior fans. So, I was surprised about that one, but I think what it's done, Jimmy, is all these documentaries, the Dark Side stuff, the A&E stuff, it's just giving wrestling another breath, more exposure, more media stretch. And sometimes when you get an excessive amount of media stretch, some of it's not all going to be Hearts and Flowers. Quite frankly, I don't know that Hearts and Flowers really draws money.
Right.
In today's world.
Listen, I think for the wrestling fan out there who's going to watch that, they don't need Hearts and Flowers. I think they just want the real story.
Honesty.
And the truth, which is, for me, this is just me personally, if you take all of the A&E ones and all of this season's Vice, Dark Side of the Ring, my personal favorite was the Brian Pillman one.
Yeah.
Because it's just such a unique story, unique career.
Right.
Tragic in a way with the injury. Favorite isn't even the word. Maybe that to me was the most fascinating one. You want to say the Jake the Snake Roberts one, but that was obviously really dark. But the Pillman one, when you think about that's a guy today, I think, could have been huge.
Yeah, he would have.
Yeah, for sure. You were in that one, obviously.
One of my favorites.
Yeah.
He's one of my favorites. I was able to get him from Calgary to Atlanta, working for Stu Hart, got trained there, played for the Stampeders for a while. Brian always wanted to be a football player. That was his first love.
Right.
But, I found it ironic. And as a sports guy, you can relate to this better than most guys I talk with. And I can't remember the exact year, but the first team All-American nose tackle by AP was William Perry, who had to go 3 1/4.
At least.
And Brian was about 2 1/4.
Right.
And Brian was the second team AP All-American nose tackle.
It's amazing he was a nose tackle.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy.
But it demonstrated his fierceness.
Yeah.
And being relentless. He had those 30-something throat operations before he got to elementary school.
Right.
He was made fun of from day one because he sounded real raspy and froggy and things of that nature. So he had a hell of a life.
But I love, too, if anyone hasn't seen it and you're a wrestling fan, that the way he maneuvered out of his WCW contract to get onto ECW, get onto WWE. It was fascinating. That's the stuff I think fans love. There was obviously A&E did a Mick Foley episode. Is there anything that has not been said, not been revealed, anything that anybody doesn't know about the famous Hell in the Cell when the Undertaker throws Mick off the cage. Obviously, you have the most famous line of all there with, you know, good God Almighty, they've broken him. Is there anything we don't know about that? Or is it all been told?
Well, I can tell you that, ironically, last night on the Peacock Network, I watched Stone Cold, what's it called? Stone Cold Sessions, or
right, the Broken Skull Sessions.
Broken Skull Sessions. And he had Mick on as his guest, and there was a lot more discussed about that event, Hell in a Cell, than I had previously heard. Because Austin was there, Mick was going to do a run in. He did a run in Austin's right. match, which was the last match on the card against Kane, and before that they had the Hell in a Cell match. And it was just interesting how all that was put together and how Mick was able to get back to the ring. He was supposed to go to the ring as a heel, a villain. But after what they saw him put himself through earlier in that same night in that same building, it was kind of a unique, a different dynamic than they had planned for. So if anybody wants to know more about that event, Mick's personality, mindset, Undertaker had a big hand in all that stuff. Because Undertaker was going to have to bless the bump off the top. And that Mick worked on that with him. It was Terry Funk's idea. And Mick worked on Undertaker for several weeks, I'm told. And I was there. I knew, but I thought it was so absurd. It would never happen.
So did you know before it happened, did you know that Mick was working on the Undertaker to do the spot?
I knew Mick had in mind, he wanted to do some sort of sensational stunt surrounding the cell, but detail wise, I wasn't informed.
Right.
And I'm glad that I wasn't, because I probably would have gone to bat to say, we can't do this. You know, I was head of the talent relations department at that time. You know, I was like the player personnel guy.
Yeah.
I'd have said, you know, the risk reward here is ridiculous. So let's not do it. And I would have screwed up one of the most memorable moments in the history of pro wrestling. So my whole theory has always been, tell me as little as I need to know before I sit down at the desk and look at the monitor and start calling a match. I want to be authentic. I want to be spontaneous. I want to be organic and real. And that's kind of, all those are kind of, maybe are the oxymorons when you're talking about pro wrestling. I want it to be real. We know it's staged, but the physicality is real. They do their own stunts. So that was kind of my thought on that deal, but I'm glad I didn't get involved in it, because I probably would have gone the other way on the decision.
And I assume you have that same attitude today doing the AEW Wednesday night Dynamite. You don't want to know, and you want to know as little as possible.
No, it's interesting, Jimmy, the how things have changed. We're in a world where everything's got a name now. Moves that heretofore had a regular name, or an established name, better said, are now, they have a different name. A suicide dive headfirst through the second and third rope is now a tope el suicida. Well, hell, I can't speak good English, much less Spanish. So I've had to adapt to that stuff. Right. And I've been criticized by some younger fans because I wasn't as versed on that terminology, because I call things a different, they're the same move. They're the same thing.
Right.
A drop kick off the top ropes. Now a missile drop kick. It's still a drop kick, for God's sakes.
Right.
But that's how exact and how unique the audience is. They got all this new info. They're going to use it.
Yeah. Last one here before I let you go. Jim Ross has been great. Grilling JR podcast and the JR studio sessions on adfreeshows.com. I just got to ask you, because this is a sports media podcast and this ties into it. And like I said, you're the greatest wrestling play-by-play man of all time.
Thank you.
What did you make of the Adnan Virk situation in terms of, got hired by WWE with no wrestling background, which I thought was quite bizarre. Yeah. And then he lasts, I think it was 6 or 7 shows. And then Vince obviously blows him out there. When he first got hired, did you think this isn't going to work, or what was your reaction when he first got hired?
Well, I assumed that Adnan had been doing training they had it sequestered in a booth, and they got one of their many broadcasters to sit down with him, and they practiced, call some matches. I'm told that didn't happen. Didn't and happen. As I said earlier about product knowledge, if you are going to be in a world of pro wrestling and without the product knowledge, and it may be this same, somebody listening to the show or watching this interview, Jimmy, would say, well, that's the way it is in sales. You got to know what you're selling. You got to have, so that's no secret. It's not, it's common sense. However, he got in way over his head. He got the old proverbial deep water before he was ready to navigate those deep waters. I've heard he's a real nice guy.
Very nice guy. Great guy.
He's articulate. He's educated. I just think he was thrown to the wolves a little bit early without the proper training.
And then what was your reaction when Vince, when he, after seven shows, they ended the experiment? Not surprised?
Not really. Adnan was just, he wasn't comfortable there. You could tell. Hesitations, longer pauses than maybe necessary. He couldn't go too deep into the strategy or lineage or history or heritage or things of that nature because he didn't have that education. And that's not his fault, by the way, whatsoever.
Right. Well, plus then he's got Vince in his ear and he's doing a job he's never done before. Yeah.
It's hard to equate this gravelly voice that sounded like this guy on the other end has been gargling with Drano. And he's the most powerful man in the world, in your world, professional world,
right,
by far. And he's blasting you in your headset while you're on the air live. You know, I did a match one time where he was, it always sticks in my mind. He said, told me to say something and I ignored him. And then he said, say it. I ignored him. And so then we went to commercial break. He comes back in my head and said, I know I'm going to get it. JR, yes, sir. Did you hear me tell you to say it? I sure did, sir. Well, why didn't you? He's like he's in the military now. He says, you ignored a direct order. Okay, Sergeant Schultz, I ignored a direct order. I said, well, before the show started, you address this specific matter with me. And you said, no matter what you do, don't do this, which is exactly what you're telling me to do. Oh, that's a good call then. So you think.
I was not expecting that ending.
Oh, you could say, it doesn't matter if I'm right or wrong. If I told you to do it, you got to do it. So, but I knew it was not for the betterment of the show. And then he got a chuckle out of it. And, but there's all those things. You got to know how to handle it.
Right.
And that's not, and how to deal with it. I don't have that issue with Tony Khan.
No Tony one's Khan's in your ear on Wednesday nights.
Oh, he's awesome. He's on the headset. He'll help us out, you know, but he's wonderful.
So does he give you directions when you're doing AEW on Wednesday nights?
Very sporadically.
Okay.
And it's generally something he just thought of. He wants to get into the commentary. Oh, don't forget to mention we're going to Miami for that big, our first big live event outside of Daly's place in Jacksonville. Don't forget to mention our do the NBA playoffs. Our schedule's moved around a little bit. Like this, for example, this Saturday night,
right,
we got a hell of a show lined up. I hope people can find it and will find it on Saturday night on TNT. But once we're past this Saturday, we're back to our Wednesdays and here off we go. And it should be a lot of fun. But I love working for Tony. It's because, and I'm just saying it to suck up to him, but he's fun to be around. He's young and energetic, and he's creative as hell. And he's very, very, look, he was helping with the draft. I don't know how hard it was to draft Trevor Lawrence, but that's kind of easy.
That's okay.
Whatever it was.
Yeah.
I am so ignorant when it comes to even how to turn my phone off.
That's cool. Right.
But he's just, he's fun to be around. And here's the thing, because of his age, Jimmy, he identifies with the talent really, really well.
Yeah.
And they can talk to him about music. You know, I heard a interview today, or as we're recording this, with Jungle Boy Jack Perry on Busted Open. And they talked about music. And Tony wanted to, this, the music, he bought the rights to the music that Jungle Boy's using. Mm-hmm. Not unlike he bought the rights to John Moxley's music, you know, the for Major League, right. A Wild Thing.
Right.
So he's with it. And he runs the show, man, and he writes the TVs. I just wonder if his flame's ever going to go out. he's at it. He's got Fulham Football Club in England.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, all these things, the Jags are rebuilding, yep. Obviously. So he's always got something going on, but I love working for him. I love the enthusiasm, quite frankly.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. And like I said, we got JR doing AEW Dynamite on Wednesday nights after this week. And you can check out Grilling JR with Conrad Thompson. Great, great podcast. I can't recommend it enough. And the new JR's studio sessions on adfreeshows.com. I think that covers it all.
I got the only thing I would mention being the panhandler that I am is I have a website called jrsbbq.com. And we sell barbecue sauce and chipotle ketchup, jalapeno honey mustard, beef jerky, all my books, things of this nature.
Perfect timing for the summer and the grilling.
Yeah, grilling time, baby.
There you go.
And Jimmy, email me back your shipping address, and I'll send you the old proverbial care package.
I appreciate that. Thank you,
Jeff. I'm glad to do it.
Appreciate it.
Are you able to grill there where you are?
Oh, yeah. I'm out on Long Island. I grill... you know, I even grill in the winter. I mean, I enjoy the cold more than the heat. So I go out there with a sweatshirt and I grill in December, you know,
there you go.
It gets rough sometimes in the summer, you know, when it's hot and humid and that smoke is, you know, hitting you in the face. But yeah, I try to grill a lot. So, appreciate it. And, good luck with everything and, keep going. Well, appreciate it.
I love your work, buddy. And I always have. And, anytime we can sit and chat, I'm for it.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Be well. All right, joining me now from Sports Business Journal, SI Media podcast regular, John Oran. John, how are you?
Hey, Jimmy. Great, man. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. A couple of sports media topics I find interesting going on right now, so I wanted to get your take. Let's start with the NBA. I mean, ESPN must be just drowning their sorrows here with the potential of an Atlanta Phoenix or a Milwaukee Phoenix NBA Finals. Take out the Clippers because that's the LA market. If they got Hawks Suns or Bucks Suns, well, do you think it'd be rated even lower than last year's NBA Finals, or last year because of the pandemic and the bubble, it'll still do better than that?
It should still do better than that. But you know what? Throw the Clippers in as well.
You
could have thrown the Nets in too. Those aren't the Lakers and the Knicks. Let's not mistake sort of the teams for the markets. And so neither team, one of the more surprising things to me that through this season and through the playoffs has been, I know that they're out now, but the Nets have Kevin Durant, who, if you're an NBA fan, yet you have to watch Kyrie, James Harden, who I can't watch. I hate his game, but three big stars. I know that they dealt with a lot of injuries, but you can't, it's not like they were the Golden State Warriors back when Durant was on there. And it's not like they were the Miami Heat when LeBron took his talents to South Beach. So all of the teams that missed the playoffs and left in the first round really left a hole. And if you want to be optimistic, this is really a chance for ESPN and Turner and the NBA to grow new stars and to get people knowing about more than just LeBron. But this does just, this has a feel, I sound like an old guy here, Jimmy. This has a feel of Michael Jordan leaving in 1998, and it was like, oh my God, what do we do? And it's going to take a while for those new stars to develop.
Listen, people could say whatever they want. In about a week to 10 days, you're going to be wishing you had either LeBron or Steph Curry in the NBA Finals.
I mean, one of the things that frustrates me most is that when people say, oh, there was, remember the stories that were written about Warriors fatigue. Maybe we're just tired of the Warriors.
Right.
That's not how TV works. You know who these people are. You come back and there's a whole story arc there.
And it's really just, listen, Devin Booker, Trae Young, and Giannis, obviously great players, fun to watch. But in terms of ESPN, And they're not bringing any fringe fans to the television or the streaming service or wherever people watch things now.
Well, what about Kevin Herter? He's a Maryland grad, Jimmy. Come on, you left him off your list there, man.
I somehow don't think ESPN's going to be running commercials
for Opie Taylor.
Yeah.
That's absolutely right. For 2021, can that change with those same players that you mentioned by 2024? Right. You know, that's sports. You know, you get these people and you grow them, and you know we'll see. But this is an opportunity. They'd rather have LeBron. He's a ratings getter. They'd rather have, you know, Steph Curry in Golden State. They produce pretty big ratings. But, you know, this is another way of looking at it. It's you're really growing the sport.
That's a great glass half full.
Because
the ratings have not been good at all for these playoffs. I know the NBA and ESPN and Turner want to sell it as they're up from last year. But, I mean, that doesn't count. I mean, really, the basis is 2019, and they're off pretty significantly from 2019.
They were relatively flat in round one, and I off that 2019 base, they were down big in round two. I think you're going to be surprised with round three, because in 2019, if you remember, that was when Toronto was in there, and so you had another whole market there. So I think the comps actually might be pretty good. But it's unmistakable that the numbers aren't great, and there's not a lot of casual fans that are sort of rallying around these guys right now.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting. You know, I think I've talked about this with you before, and it's a theme here, it seems, weekly about, you know, everything going to streaming, and, you know, I'm an advocate for just keep everything on cable and everything. And I saw this, I didn't really watch any of the golf over the weekend, but I saw a billion people retweet this tweet from ESPN's Kevin Van Valkenburg into my feed. It read, "Hey Siri, how do I watch the US Open? Well, Kevin, download and subscribe to Peacock, then prepare to switch over to the Golf Channel. If you have cable," oh my God, I said Siri and it put Siri on my phone. That's crazy. Unbelievable. I'll continue. "How do I watch the US Open? Well, Kevin, download and subscribe to Peacock, then prepare to switch over to the Golf Channel. If you have cable, if on Apple TV, make sure you have the NBC Sports app, then switch over to NBC for a bit, then switch back to Peacock." Now, I really didn't watch the golf. Was that sort of an accurate representation of how people had to watch the US Open this past weekend?
Yeah, and we discussed this the last time I was on, Jimmy, about like whether it's a great time to be a sports fan or not. And right. I think, you know, if you're NBC and you have the English Premier League and you want to see all the games of the English Premier League, you can't cut the cord. You have to get NBCSN, which they're getting rid of now. So then you're going to have to watch it USA, possibly CNBC. You're certainly going to have to get the broadcast channel, and you're going to have to get Peacock. And then not only Peacock, but you're going to have to subscribe to higher level of service on Peacock. And so Van Valkenburg's tweet was great because he's a hardcore fan and he wants to see it all. But if you're a casual fan, NBC showed exactly what you needed to see on it. On Sunday, you were able to see that round. Bryson DeChambeau sort of going insane in the back nine, and you know, just it was a you were able to see what you wanted as a casual fan. If you're a hardcore fan, it's a height of frustration.
It was a great tweet, and the fact that was accurate is frightening. The only thing I would say is, you know, I'd like to see a tweet like that from an ESPN person when something's on ESPN Plus and people can't watch it. You know,
see Van Valkenburg's tweet just regularly, but if I want to read his story, I have to subscribe to ESPN Plus a lot of times.
We're all in the muck. We're all in the muck.
Of course, look who's talking. You have to subscribe to SPJ if you want to read me. So I'm not taking a shot.
I know. I me either. I'm just saying, you know, it's the way of the world now. I thought the rating for the golf seemed pretty good, slightly down from 2019, but pretty good overall, I think.
I think golf has
without
to be.
Tiger, I mean, you know.
This isn't 2020, but, you know, they are going up against the NBA playoffs, which are going later than normal. We still have the Stanley Cup playoffs happening. There's a lot of competition going on right now. There's a you know, there wasn't really competition for the Olympic trials, you know, because NBC owns the rights to those as well. But they were dealing with a lot of other competition, which would have depressed numbers. Tiger, you know, wasn't playing at all, and he still moves the needle, even though like he probably shouldn't anymore. But I think they overall got to be pretty happy with those numbers.
Is there a sport or a league that should be worried about their 2021 ratings compared to 2019? Is anyone sort of like got hit hard in 2020 with, you know, we changed the way we watch sports and hasn't been able to pick back up or bounce back? Is there any league or sport that you think could be in a little bit of trouble?
I think that those sports are sort of the mid-tier to smaller sports. I think that if you take a look, for example, at baseball ratings have, you know, not been great. And hockey ratings have not been great. The NHL just doubled its rights fee and deals with ESPN and Turner. Major League Baseball got a huge increase from Turner and Fox. ESPN's paying a little bit less, but they still have a package that's out there to sell. So even though ratings are down, and then again, even though ratings are down, rights fees are going up. But also, like, we don't quite know what the streaming numbers are. And that's how, you know, like two old guys like us, like, yeah, we're watching TV. But, like, right. You know, they want to get the younger audiences that stream. And so, you know, the numbers there are much not they're not higher, but they add a lot of viewership to that number.
I thought it was very interesting. I know that the NHL doesn't move the needle in America, but the fact that the NHL players were getting beat on a nightly basis by the college softball, I thought was pretty interesting.
You know, it is interesting, but it's also a story that happens every year. College softball is one of those, like every year in the spring, people are like, wow, look at those numbers. I mean, they got, you know, close. I don't know what it is off the top of my head, but it was close to 2 million for a weekday afternoon championship game. I mean, yeah. Imagine that in prime time. Right. I really feel that college softball is just one of the most underutilized properties that's out there right now. I mean, I can't believe that the NCAA, and it was people want to blame ESPN, but it was NCAA's decision to put in the middle of the afternoon. I can't believe they decided to do that with a sport that just has such popularity out there.
Yeah, I thought ESPN took an unfair hit there because I think the schedule got changed around because it was rainouts, and they had NBA playoff games at night. What are they supposed to do?
I mean, yeah, they're not going to move the NBA playoff games. ESPN2, I think they could have moved track and field, but then you would have moved track and field. It was NCAA track and field. And so what I was told is that the NCAA had a decision. They could go in prime time on ESPNU, or they could go earlier in the day on ESPN. And they just decided they didn't want to deal with travel issues. They didn't want to deal with, you know, ticketing issues and travel issues, not just for the teams, but for the fans as well. And so they opted to do the afternoon. But I can't believe that they didn't foresee some sort of way to get that in front of more people.
Yeah. Yeah. But when you have rainouts and then the schedule's thrown, you know, into anarchy, what are you supposed to do? Switching gears, we've had fun with this on the podcast many times. You're not a wrestling guy. We know that. But you are a business guy. And there are some major rumblings that the WWE is getting ready to sell. Is that a story you're following? Is there anything you can tell us about that? Is it on your radar? You know, there's rumblings, maybe NBC, Peacock makes an offer to Vince. I don't know what's going to happen there, but give me like the Sports Business Journal perspective on the WWE possible.
I can't talk about Bob Backlund here, can I?
Yeah. You can. I'd be more than happy to talk about
him. I only like him as a nice guy. He turned evil.
He was a great heel. He was a great heel when Monday Night Raw launched on USA.
Those rumors have been around for a long time. I think those rumors are gathered steam when they kind of sold the WWE network to or rented the WWE network to Peacock. So now, you know, you have to get Peacock if you want to see that. They brought in Nick Khan from CAA to run it. He's in the process of sort of hiring a whole bunch of media guys in order to sort of build that business out. I don't get the sense that the rumblings are any more serious now than they have been in the past. I do know that the market right now, I mean, coming out of the pandemic, there's money burning a hole in some of these companies' pockets. And the market right now, if you want to sell, you know, sports sites, websites, if you want to sell publications, you know, if you want to sell something like the WWE, I don't think it's ever been frothier than it is right now. And I would get the sense that Vince would sell for the right price. But I think that right price in Vince's mind is plenty high. Mm-hmm. And I don't get the sense that anything is overly serious right now.
Do you know
if something's announced this afternoon, though, I would appreciate if you edited that one out, Jimmy. Okay.
I don't think it's happening this afternoon, but okay. With Vince, you never know. I mean, is there, if Vince wanted to sell it today, what would you think the price tag would be?
Oh, I can't even begin to guess what the price tag would be, but I can begin to guess that NBC would want to have something like that. You know, any of these media companies, but I think that's what Nick Khan is starting to try to do. He's, you know, he hired Jamie Horwitz, the guy behind the daytime programming on ESPN and Fox Sports One, and they just want to create this programming to sell to Netflix or to sell to Amazon Prime. I mean, the amount of streaming operators, HBO Max. I mean, you throw them all in there. There's a lot out there. There's a big market for known content, and that's what the WWE certainly has.
Right.
And I think that's where they see a big growth potential is by selling, you know, those kinds of shows. But as far as like how much they would get, I mean, I'm always on the low side of any price. I right. can't believe how much some of these things go for.
Will be fascinating if that ever happens on many levels.
Now, I'm not a WWE guy, but I am I'm a big fan of their business. They have grown so organically, and I think that they're about to supercharge that in the media space.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because the on-air product is not what fans really are into these days. I mean, there's a lot of backlash against the storylines, and the wrestlers are great themselves. It's really storyline and the writing and all the soap opera part of it that seems to be a big struggle for a long time now. But the business itself is still thriving. So
it's, yeah, I see that backlash every Monday night on Twitter. Yeah. I hear it a lot. But if you look at the ratings,
right,
that Raw brings in, that all the WWE products bring in, I mean, their numbers. We talked earlier about, you know, about the NHL and MLB, they would kill for some of those numbers sometimes.
Yeah. Along the lines of sort of WWE downsizing, ESPN is obviously, they've cut a lot of talent. It's been clear that they're sort of doing a market correction, I guess, if you will, where they think the sports center people are getting paid too much, and so them not renew. Their MMA guy, my God, I'm drawing a blank on his name. Ariel.
Helwani.
Yes. Is that going to continue, or do you think they've sort of got things where they want it to be, or do you think they're still going to be looking to cut money here and there?
I think they'll still be looking to cut money. I think that this is more than a market correction. I think, you know, during about 10 years ago, Fox Sports One was launching. NBC took over Versus and renamed it the NBC Sports Network.
Wow, I forgot about Versus.
And the dearly departed Versus. And John Skipper, who was at ESPN at the time, thought that this was really the way to differentiate ESPN beyond live sports, was to really highlight its on-air personalities. And then you had, you know, Fox Sports One trying to poach some. And so the bidding wars went up. And they've been trying to correct that ever since. NBC Sports Network is going belly up at the end of they're closing it at the end of this year. Fox Sports One hasn't really emerged as it's a competitor to ESPN2, I suppose, more so than ESPN. And so all of a sudden they're stuck with these gigantic salaries for people that aren't going to really be willing to pay them anymore. And I think that as contracts continue to come up, you know, you're going to see ESPN start to, you know, try to pay less, pay some people less. And part of it is when John Skipper left, Jimmy Pitaro came in, and really emphasize live sports. Why do you go to ESPN? Is it to watch, to watch afternoon programming, or is it to watch a game? And they get okay ratings for the afternoon programming, but they get BAFO ratings, really big ratings for the games. So that's where they want to spend all their money to try to make those as good as they can. And the people that are hosting SportsCenter, that's almost like plug and play. Is the way that ESPN views that. So,
yeah, I mean, I know a lot of media people talked about, but ESPN getting the SEC, I think, from CBS was a huge story that didn't even get the attention it probably deserved, because that package is tremendous. And,
if you look at ESPN the past 6 months, they renewed the NFL deal. They got the SEC deal. They paid for La Liga to come over. They got the NHL from NBC. I mean, all of a sudden, so on one side of the coin, you could say, like, well, look, they're cutting back and they're cutting costs. Look what happened to Kenny Mayne. But on the other side of it, like, they're really spending a lot of money to see not only ESPN, but ESPN Plus.
Right.
So it's a interesting dichotomy there.
Last one here before I let you go. I thought it was Charles Barkley did an interview last week and said,
down here in DC,
that he's retiring at 60 and he is currently 58. Now, if anyone else said that, I would say, okay, well, you're on the most popular studio show in all of sports. Turner will give you a blank check. You could fill it out and you're not going to retire. If there's someone who probably will not fit that sort of scenario, it would be Barkley. Do you think he's going to leave in 2 years? He doesn't seem like someone who says stuff just to say stuff.
No, he's been pretty consistent. That wasn't the first time that he's talked about that. And he's been relatively consistent in talking about that. I have no idea whether he will or not. I do know a lot of people that say that end up staying. And I know that once he decides to step down or step away, you can bet that Jeff Zucker, if he's still around at Turner, will back up a Brinks truck. Because as good as I think Shaq is and as good as I think Kenny is, like, Barkley is the guy that makes that show go. Right. You can expect ESPN or really anybody that has NBA, the NBA rights at that point, are going to do whatever they can to get Charles Barkley in, because he is, he's just a TV talent. He really is. And will it be enough, or will they be able to sweeten the pot enough in order to keep him? I know when John Madden decided to retire, Dick Ebersol ended up keeping him by saying, like, okay, you don't have to travel to certain games on the East Coast. We'll keep you on the West Coast. So can they do something along those lines? Have him call it from his home in Arizona or
right. Whatever.
I don't know, but I can see the networks being creative enough to try to keep him to stay. And my bet is, without knowing Charles very well at all, my bet is that he would stick around.
Yeah, me too. I don't see him going to another network. He's got such a good thing going there. I can see him retiring, but I don't see him going somewhere. I mean, I don't see him starting all over at another network with a new crew and all this. If you watch the documentary they did on Inside the NBA, the producers of that show are very important to Charles. So I think it would be retire or stay with TNT. But again, who knows when a blank check is involved.
Yeah, and despite what I just said about ESPN, cutting the salaries, he is the type of talent that right. drives TNT's NBA programming. I could easily, ESPN is cutting talent salaries, but not for Scott Van Pelt and not for Stephen A. Smith, not for people that draw viewers in. Right. And I think Charles Barkley certainly is somebody that fits in that mold.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a story I'm going to definitely keep an eye on. I think that's interesting to see what happens there, because I do think it'll be retire or stay with TNT. So, I appreciate you coming on and giving us some insight there into these topics. And
hey, man, always happy to come.
Bucks Suns NBA Finals. I can't wait to hear the spin out of Bristol.
Here it comes. Get ready to a lot of comparisons to 2020.
Yes, that's all you're going to see. Exactly. All right. Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Take care. All right, time now for the new weekly Train of Thought segment. Debuted it last week with my buddy Sal Licata from WFAN in New York and SNY in New York, where I'm just going to throw out some topics here and sort of an extension of the Train of Thoughts column. Sal, how's it going?
Yeah, not bad. Good to catch up with you on a weekly basis now. This is fun.
I mentioned you're on FAN and SNY. What's your Twitter? I know you love Twitter and getting feedback from people. Do you want
I don't even want to give it out. I don't want any negativity. I don't want any hate at @Sal_Licata. You know what? I've actually not even been checking the mentions as of late, and it's been therapeutic. It's been great.
Sal has quit Twitter about 75 times in the last 3 years. All right. A couple of things I need to get off my... Let me just start with this Carl Nassib thing, and you don't even have to comment on it because it really ended up being this whole deal yesterday where I wrote a column on Tuesday that I was disappointed in the lack of public support from current star NFL players. Now, because everyone on Twitter is an asshole, people are like, oh, Warren Moon said something. Okay, well, he's not a current star NFL player. The only two current players I saw were J.J. Watt and Saquon Barkley. I know Edelman tweeted, you want to call him a current player, he just retired. I'll even give you that. So that's three. And people are like, oh, you know, if they don't do it on Twitter. And listen, I'm one of these people. Like, I don't think you need to do stuff on Twitter for show. I hate that. But in this case where he is the first ever openly gay current slash active player who has to deal with his teammates in the locker room and players around the league. I think it would have been nice if you would have had other big names come out and said, you know, this is great, support you. Even better that you're donating all this money to the Trevor Fund, which helps, you know, if you read his message, his main message more than, oh, I'm gay, was about helping gay youth who have these crazy suicide rates. So I would have liked to have seen a little more support from the star players around the league. And then, of course, on Twitter, there are a lot of people who obviously agreed with me. And then you get the people who are like, you know, you have the totally homophobic people who, you know, I just block. But then there's people like Warren Moon said something, or like, you know, the fourth string D lineman on some team. Nobody cares about them. That wasn't my point. Nobody, you know, those people don't read the column. But like a little more than J.J. Watt and Saquon Barkley, I think, would have been nice for the guy. But that's just me.
Yeah, it is interesting. You, a couple of different things here. I am not one who likes the forced take, right? So when everybody's going one way, you almost feel like you have to chime in because otherwise you're going to be labeled as a jerk if you don't. So there's a fine line between that and then players standing up at a spot where they really do need to support Nassib here because this is monumental. I mean, as you mentioned, this is not – Sam, when he came out of when he was coming out of college before he got drafted, Michael Sam, right. This is an active player coming out. And I understand that we should be at a point in society where, you know, now organizations celebrate Pride Night and they're much more open to it. It's something that's talked about much more regularly still. And maybe that's why it loses some of its value here. But still, you're talking about the first openly gay player who is on an NFL team.
That's the whole point.
Right. Yeah, I would think that certain guys, let's say Tom Brady, and I hate to call him out, but he's one of the faces of the NFL, certain guys should feel a responsibility to go out and support Nassib in this spot.
And so, some people say, oh, maybe they sent him a text, maybe they got in touch with him privately. Okay, that's fine, but this is a situation where you're trying to change sort of the public perception. I mean, there's the archaic beliefs about a gay player in the locker room, so if other people would understand that, you know, because you also had that whole, you know, the people who clearly told on themselves in their responses to me are the ones who are like, who cares? This, what's the big deal? No one cares if he has sex with men, blah, blah, blah. If you think that's the point of all this, you're either a homophobe, an idiot, or both. So whatever.
And I do think that people just lose the seriousness of this. I understand. I don't care what guys are doing. I don't care what anybody's doing behind. Right. I want to see what they do on the field. That's not what this is about, though. Right. This is somebody who's open about it. The first actively, you know, gay player now in the NFL. I do believe that. Look, how many players are there in the league? And you name what, three or four that came out and said something? Right. That's not nearly enough.
And it's the NFL. It's, you know, that whole, you know, tough guy, alpha male. Sure. And I was saying, the guy was hysterical on Hard Knocks. So, like, the fact that I knew who he was because of Hard Knocks was phenomenal. All right. The other thing is, all right, we got to talk about, you're a huge baseball guy, diehard Mets fan. Now, I know you probably hate what's going on with baseball. I love it. The fact that I could get highlights of people pulling down their pants and fighting with the umpires and Joe Girardi and fighting with Max Scherzer, I actually think it's good for the game, which I know no one else does. But I think it's hysterical what's going on. I assume you probably are livid.
No, I'm not livid. I think it's stupid. I do think there's a going through the motions element to this. All right, let me come check it. Now, what happened with Girardi and the Nationals, that I loved. I mean, are you kidding me? Do you have Girardi? That's how I think it should be done, by the way. Have the manager, if he suspects something, tell the umpire, hey, go check him out. Now, I know there's going to be gamesmanship, as there was last night, right. And Girardi wants to fight Kevin Long. It was, right. I mean, that was, you're right, that was awesome.
But Girardi was out of line, though, because he asked them to check him three times. You should not be allowed to get a check three times.
Well, they checked him on their own, I think, twice, and okay. Then Girardi had them, he wanted them to check his hair. So I could understand Scherzer's frustration. I could understand the Nationals' frustration, but it was entertaining from a sports fan's perspective. The other stuff, though, with Sergio Romo getting ticked off and, you know, and like Garrett Cole and Jacob deGrom getting checked. I just, what do you think is going to happen here? It's full. There's got to be a better way to do it than on the field right after the first inning, having these guys undress. It looks ridiculous.
I think we talked about it last week. I mean, the issue I have, like if MLB wants to crack down on it, fine, but doing it in the middle of the season never made any sense. To just start this on June 22nd was
absurd. And now to do it on the field. They're doing it in the middle of the season, so they're throwing everybody for a loop. Then they're doing it on the field in front of everybody to see. That's how you're going to do it. Oh, and by the way, even if you check a guy multiple times, does that mean that he can't go into the dugout in, let's say, the fifth inning or the third inning and use it and then get rid of it and change hats? Like,
well, they got to tighten the rules on this. And then I read that, and then they checked – who was it? Loaiza last night for the Yankees. They checked him after he got rocked.
Right.
What are we doing?
The biggest point is there's definitely got to be a better way, but they should be checking based on suspicion, not just random checkpoints here. There's got to be a reason why you're checking. Hey, this guy's been, you know.
But you know the managers are going to check just to sort of mess with the pitcher's
head. That's fine. But that's fine. If a manager asks for it, that's fine. And by the way, baseball did say that there's going to be punishment toward, now who knows what kind of punishment it's going to be, but toward managers who check for no reason and there's nothing there, whatever. So, which is fine because you don't want everybody to just check every single inning. But there should be a purpose. Either a manager needs to have a purpose or the umpires. You can't just be checking guys after they get lit up for no reason.
I love it just because I want to see how these pitchers are going to react. I mean, if this is how pitchers are going to react, I mean, we're going to get a show every night, basically.
It's got to stop.
You know, Manfred will probably like send out some letter today saying, like, you know, if you pull down your pants, you'll get fined or something like that. So yeah. The fun will stop soon.
There is a fine line there, too, whether it's on TV or in person. You get kids in the state. I mean, guys can't be just whipping off their belt undressing in the middle of the field.
Well, nobody showed anything. They kept it PG rated.
Did you see Romo? I mean, he basically got down to his, almost Steve Lyons-esque.
Yeah, it was still PG rated. Yeah. All right. The next topic, there was a phenomenal tweet that got sent out at the end of the Clippers-Suns game on Tuesday. From at StatMuse, the last 90 seconds of that game took 33 real-time minutes. Now, listen, I don't watch college basketball because I can't take all the timeouts and the play is terrible as well. I'll always watch the NBA, but that is a problem. Like, make a rule where you can't call timeout in the last 2 minutes or something because you can't have 90 seconds take a half an hour. That's brutal.
I happened to watch this live. Now, I did not watch any of the game, but I was doing something and then I checked, either I saw on Twitter, I saw a score and I was like, oh, it's close late. Let me flip it on. And then while I was doing the radio show last night, I was exaggerating, saying the final, 2 minutes took 35 minutes in real time. I had no idea it actually did take that, but it is, that's unwatchable. I mean,
and if the Suns don't win it on that crazy bucket, I think that ends up being the theme of the game because obviously the Suns win in crazy fashion. So that's what people are talking about. Just an unbelievable inbound pass from Crowder. But you can't have that. You just can't have that. 33 minutes to play 90 seconds?
This has been a problem for years in the NBA with the timeouts down the stretch. Now you throw replays. They replayed wasn't even that many plays, and they replayed it every time. It's annoying. Right. Just rule it. Out of bounds, whatever. Then they're ticky-tack stuff. They're replaying it, not going based on what the spirit of the rule is, as Van Gundy was talking about during the game. That is atrocious. And if they're not doing that in the first quarter, then why is it so important in the final seconds of the fourth quarter? So it doesn't add up to me. Replay, and I've said this for years, replay is killing sports. That destroyed what was, I mean, it turned out to be a great ending anyway, but it destroyed what should have been a fun, fast-paced, moving ending to that tremendous game.
Well, that's, I get annoyed because obviously we talked about it with the baseball, with the sticky stuff. Like, people are like, oh, baseball's a mess. Baseball's a joke. Manfred's a joke. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, like, replay in the NBA is a complete disaster.
Maybe even worse with NBA than anything. For some reason, I feel like it plays in the NFL, right? We've been watching the NFL forever. I don't mind replay there, although at certain things in the NFL got carried away. Baseball, I hate it. And basketball, I think it might be the absolute worst with replay, right, especially down the stretches of these games.
Last topic. You're a wrestling fan like I am. Today, we're taping this Wednesday, June 23rd. It was 25 years ago today that Steve Austin sort of became Stone Cold Steve Austin and did his promo with Michael Hayes, who was then Doc Hendricks at the King of the Ring, where he said, Austin 316 says, I just whipped your ass, to Jake the Snake Roberts. Do you remember, were you a fan during that era? Did you remember watching that?
So I was not in real time a fan of that era. Now, obviously, I think it speaks volumes to how significant it is that even a casual fan, I was a diehard fan from, like, let's say 85 to 92, right? So then I was out of it at that point. I did get back in a little bit with The Rock circa 2000. So I missed that beginning, the start of the Attitude Era. But, you know, with all the stuff on the network or DVDs in years gone past, I've gone back and watched it. So I understand the significance of it and I know the history of it. But I do think that even somebody like me who didn't live through it in real time to understand the significance of it, it just shows you how impactful that was. Probably even bigger than wrestling, right? It just spawned a whole new, the Attitude Era, which is one of the biggest.
I think it's the most popular selling t-shirt all time in the history of wrestling, the Austin 316 one. Now, I know.
How quick did it happen? From that moment, was it like the next night, the next week that everybody
started?
It
was pretty quick because then it sort of tied in. So that was King of the Ring, which is usually, so I'm trying to remember now the timing of it, because it really took, once Vince screwed Bret Hart and he became the top heel, and then that started sort of the Vince Stone Cold feud. That's when everything went, I mean,
right,
the Vince Stone Cold and then Stone Cold stunning Vince in Madison Square Garden on Monday Night Raw, that was almost bigger than the promo. That was when the sort of the rocket ship happened.
But this was the beginning of that, right? And didn't he beat an old-looking, slow, heavy-looking Jake the Snake in that tournament?
Yes.
But this was the origin of...
Yeah, this was the very beginning.
Right.
Okay. Right. So it was, I know Sal, because I'm friends with him. Sal's a diehard Hulk Hogan guy.
Yeah, I'm a Hogan guy.
But Stone Cold, like, if you're doing the Mount Rushmore, the first guy on it over Hogan should be Stone Cold.
Well, what about Rock? You would put him over Rock.
I think The Rock and Austin are 1-2.
Hogan all was time?
Oh, yeah. For me. I understand the Hogan thing in the business, but in terms of entertainment value, the guy was as boring as it got.
Well, but it was also a different time. And I know, but if you, the Mount Rushmore guys, like if you were to ask me, you know, Hogan, Rock, I was always a good guy. What do you call it? A face guy.
Right.
So those are the top guys.
Right. See, that's the thing. I was like 6 years old wanting all the heels to beat the shit out of Hogan. I wanted Rick Rude to beat him. I wanted King Kong Bundy to beat him. I wanted all those guys to beat Hogan.
You must have been miserable because he never lost.
Exactly. Exactly.
And you were rooting for the Warrior in WrestleMania 6. That still bothers me.
I don't remember because I wasn't a huge Warrior guy either. Maybe it's a weird thing how it ended up to like where I sort of talk and write for a living. But like, I was always into the guys who spoke on the mic. So like Piper, I was way into Roddy Piper, way more than Hulk Hogan. Piper's Pit was like the most, you know, and all those shows when they did the Brother Love show and they did the beef, the barber show. That was always the highlight for me more than anything involving Hulk Hogan. I loved the talking part of it.
Me too. So, and back then it was more rare. And I'll tell you, I just went back recently and watched a lot of this stuff, primetime wrestling or just the, you know, even the old shows, the Tuesday Night Titans or whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah.
And watching all the old WrestleManias. Piper is extremely underrated. I know that he's appreciated by a lot of wrestling fans, but it's always Hogan, Hogan, Hogan. He made Hogan back then. He was a hated villain who was great on the mic. So I agree with you. I think Piper's underrated.
Yeah, he definitely is. But 25 years since, it's amazing that it's been that long since Austin sort of.
What year was that? 98?
Well, no, 25 years ago. So it was
1996. Oh, okay. Yeah,
no,
I'm bad at math.
96.
Right, because we're 21 now.
Yeah.
Wow. So that wasn't that far. See, in my mind, like 92, when I first got out of it, it seems like a whole different world just 5 years later with Austin, right? It's only 5 years. That's nothing.
Yeah, and then the Attitude Era started, and that was a whole other, you know, that's still the best time for, you know, pro wrestling in terms of numbers and ratings and viewers. And well, I shouldn't say that. It was better in the 80s, but the pie was much smaller then. But
what about the Monday Night Wars and all that? That was after, right? That was during. Oh, during. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Right. That was during. All right. Appreciate it, Sal. Thanks.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week.
Yep.
All right. Take it easy. All right. My thanks to Jim Ross, John Oran, Sal Licata on this episode of the SI Media Podcast. If you missed previous episodes, we had John Wertheim on his book about 1984. The book was called Glory Days, the Summer of 1984 and the 90 Days That Changed Sports and Pop Culture Forever. So if you grew up in the 80s, give that a listen. That was last week's. And 2 weeks ago, we had Stu Gatz from the Dan Le Batard Show. 3 weeks ago, Doris Burke and Evan Longoria. So if you missed any of those in the archives, check them out. Subscribe to the SI Media Podcast, rate and review. All right, that wraps it up for this week. We'll see you next week right here on the SI Media Podcast. Stay safe and take care.